Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Living and Thriving, Living and Thriving, Living and Thriving with Rusty. Living and Thriving with Rusty.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon to all my blessed beloveds out there in Radio Land. You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty, and guess what? I'm Rusty, especially today. I worked from 9:30 a.m. to 10-something last night, and my body just hurts. I can't do what I used to do. I guess I need to throw in the towel and just admit that I'm getting old. Yep, time goes by when you're having fun. That's cool. I'm super excited about today's guest. Her name is Amy Carpenter, and she's the author of two best-selling books. One is Be Strong, Be Wise, The Young Adult's Guide to Sexual Assault Awareness and Personal Safety. And the second one is Be Strong, Be Wise, 5 Easy Steps to Discussing Sexual Ethics with Teens. So if you have little people listening in, you might want to save this podcast for another time. The conversation might get a little bit, you know, rough around the edges, so that little people might have a lot more questions than maybe you're prepared to answer. So this podcast will be on and available to you at your convenience at any time, but right now is not the time necessarily to have little people around while we're talking about this particular topic. I think it's extremely valuable for parents and individuals who are in charge of young people to learn and decide whether or not, you know, these conversations need to be had, especially in regards to sexual violence and sexual awareness. Unfortunately, we live in a world where this happens all too frequently, and I love the fact that she's written a book to help guide people in awareness and prevention, hopefully, so that we have more of an open conversation and some safety parameters to work with our kids. You know, recently, within the last couple of days, there was a huge thing here in Florida. I think it was 105 children were being sexually exploited. I mean, that's just staggering to think about all of the damage, all the wounds, all the depression, all the sadness, all the just wow, you know. So I think it's really important for us to have this conversation and to do what we can as a society and a community to wrap our heads around the reality of what sexual assault is, as well as not to further victimize the victim. You know, I think there's a lot of stigmas and blame, and victims don't deserve that. They don't deserve the assault, and they certainly don't deserve to be accused that they're the cause of that assault. I was a victim myself, as most of you know, and, you know, a 3-year-old little girl being molested by her biological mother's boyfriend is not my fault. You know what I mean? And that was my personal case, but one of them, most traumatic, I think. Intervention, awareness, compassion, understanding, these are the things that I'm hoping we get out of today's episode, even though it is a very, very tough topic, and especially even for myself. I'm looking forward to Amy dialing in. I know that she's trying to. So, Amy, if you hear me, it's 914-205-5661. On a lighter note, tough stuff. It is absolutely gorgeous. And, you know, I love the sunshine. I'm a huge advocate for vitamin sun. And yet there are times when I miss that stormy, gray, cool, rainy and weather, and we're getting that today, so I feel very, very blessed today's kind of a partial R&R day because I'm so exhausted from yesterday, and I have a full week of about the same schedule. It's crazy right now. So just lying here with my windows open in southern Florida with the ocean breeze coming in, and God, that calm. It's beautiful. Perfect day for a little bit of R&R and puttering around the house. And just for giggles, those parents out there who know the rules about jars, Chloe learned a valuable lesson today about not picking anything up by its lid. So we were making quesadillas for lunch, and I just put the lid gently on the salsa jar because I knew that she was going over to add some salsa to her quesadilla. But here in Florida, you try to keep everything covered because, well, we are Jurassic Park, and there's all kinds of things that, you know, happen. And so it's just a habit to cover everything. She decided to pick the salsa up by its lid, and it went crashing everywhere. It looked like a bloodbath. It was hysterical in a lot of ways, but that is a valuable lesson. We all learn at least once in our life to always pick up from the jar, not from the lid, right? You guys know that story. I'm sure every single one of you have done it. And while we're waiting for Amy to pop on, over to speaker next week. It's been a very, 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 very busy show, and I'm getting ready to book next year's YouTube, so that's also exciting. And I don't know if you guys heard the news. I am so excited about this. This is incredibly fun. I am on season 4 of Funky Thinkers, and I don't know if you remember a few years ago when I did Funky Thinkers, I was a semifinalist. I almost made it. It's a show where votes count, so when you guys, you know, tune in and listen, you have to vote on it, and whoever gets the most votes wins. So most votes on the last episode. So I have a half crown, not a full crown, and I'm hoping that season 4, now that I'm brought back on, I get a 3/4 of a crown. Yeah, that's it. It'll be a lot of fun. Jonathan Senior is always a blast to talk to, and the game show itself. If you haven't checked it out before, just go to Funky Thinkers. You'll see all of the posts on my social media as well as LinkedIn. He literally has a virtual board that you can play with your, say you live in Maine and you have people in Oklahoma, you can play together virtually, and it's fun and it's silly, and there's truth serum and laughter and music and memory to be had. So definitely check that out. I'm super on that show. Coming up to a game board near you. So next week we have best-selling author Dr. Rita Luis. She is from the Institute of Applied Engineering. Yeah, that one. She's all about energy. She's a naturopathic physician, a 20-year veteran of the human potential field. She's a medical intuitive, a clairvoyant, and I just think it's going to be exciting to have her on. We're going to talk about her new book, The Dysfunctional Dance of the Empath and Narcissist, Stepping Out of Eden, and what myths and legends have to say about human origins. Another book she has is Avoiding the Cosmic 2x4, Dark Angels. Another one. So she has quite a bit going on, and I'm looking forward to talking to her about trauma and abuse and healing and all of that good stuff that we talk about here in the Living and Thriving Thursday. So tune in. Don't miss out on that. I'm trying to see if Miss Amy's going to pop in. If you have an opportunity, go to www.bestrongbewise, so that's bestrongbewise.com, and read some testimonials about her program. It's really exciting work that she's doing, and I love how she's integrated personal history in a way that is fundamentally helping other people survive and thrive in a very tough subject. Super excited. excited. She's going to be dialing in any minute. It's so fun having a live radio show because I never know what to babble about so that you guys don't hang up and say, okay, I'm over it. I think what else is really exciting? Oh, yeah, I'm going to be on, I'm going to be a guest. I'm going to be a guest on a show in a couple of weeks. I don't know if I told you guys this. I was also very all about the same topic. So if you really want to explore more and learn more, it is, you know, November is the United Nations End Violence Against Women campaign. I know there's a lot of November campaigns going on, but this is one that's near and dear to my heart, and I will be a guest on Virgin Beauty Bitch podcast. It's a four-year passion podcast between Christopher and Heather, and they talk about sexuality, self-image, wellness, feminism. God, I cannot speak today. What's going on with my mouth? Relationships and gender roles. And they've asked me to be a part of ending violence against women. So I'm super excited about that, and I believe it will air at some point. But just take a look at my social media. I don't think it's live that day. It doesn't say if it's live that day or not, but it might be on November 20th at 11 a.m. Otherwise, just take a peek at social media, and I will be blasting that when I have the date as to when it will air for you so that you can check it out. Incoming emails. They're always so fantastic. And I can never keep up with them. One day, somebody will volunteer and be like, hey, I'd love to be a personal assistant. Or one day I'll be a millionaire and I can pay one. As you know, I pay for all of my broadcasts and all of the social media and all of that. Every now and then people are kind and they donate, and I'm grateful for you. I had a few donations in the last month to keep the shows alive and going. So super excited. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And there's a donate button on rusty.info if you have any interest in doing a donation. Otherwise, sharing is caring, so share with your friends, your family, your family's family, your family's family, family, your lawyer, your doctor, your teachers, your nun. Sharing is caring, especially in this field. All right, we'll give her a few more minutes to see if she's going to pop on. I try to remind everybody 50,000 different ways, and it doesn't always mean they remember, because at the end of the day, stuff happens. The world is full of plot twists. No idea. So if you are interested in being a guest and you have an inspirational story that inspires and captivates people's mind well enough to help them grow, change, and shift their perspective, definitely go to my contact form on my website and check out the possibilities and be a guest. Always exciting to meet people all over the world. I feel like I'm one of the most blessed people. A few more minutes. Maybe I can try to call her. I don't know if I have a phone number. Nope, I do not. So calling her, I will not be. You guys got all the good juice anyway, and you can still check her out on her website. I think it's really powerful work that she's doing, and can always reschedule. Sometimes people are on a different time zone, and they never read that on my East Coast time. And then sometimes shit happens. Out of the basics on that one. Maybe this is her. Amy?
Yes. Hi, this is Amy.
Hello?
Hello?
Yay!
Can you hear me?
Oh, we were just getting ready to give up. Like, oh no,
Okay, sorry. I was looking for a Zoom invite. There's just so many links here. I was not sure where to go. So anyway, I'm glad to have
you on the phone.
It's just...
It is. I'm so excited to talk to you. And your phone number is a familiar phone number because I lived in that same place.
Oh, wow. In Maine.
Yeah, I built in New York, Berwick.
Ah, lovely. It's a beautiful state. It really is. And
it
now
is
you are
state. And I hear that
in
you...
New York?
No, I'm in South Florida.
Oh, we just came back from South Florida. Lovely.
Where did you go?
We went to the Sarasota area. We have a motorhome that we keep down there, and when we need to get out of Maine in the winter, we go visit it.
I'm about an hour south of you.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, it's a beautiful state. And we get to do a little bit of both the Maine and the Florida things. So that's worked out great the past couple of years. Rusty, can you hear
Absolutely.
Me okay? I feel like there's a little delay. Okay. All right. I just wanted to make sure.
Yep. And so, Amy, I'm super excited to find out more about you, and it's even nicer to know that you're Maine. My daughter, I travel back and forth to Maine all the time because her father still lives in Berwick. And this is such an important topic, and it's so real and so raw for a lot of us. When you listen to the whole radio show later, I talk a lot about my own personal experience with this. And I think it's really powerful to have this discussion, and I did advise everyone with little people, maybe they shouldn't listen to this show right now. It is live, and it might get challenging, and
yeah.
So listen to it at another time. But, wow, good for you. High five. I am so grateful for the work that you're doing. And this is not just women. It's just about sexual assault in general. And that is really, really important to preface as well, because a lot of people only think of sexual assault as a female thing, but it's really not. And I don't know about what you know, but in the last couple of days, they found 105 children in Orlando that were being held captive for sexual reasons. And that's a lot of children and a lot of pain. And so this is perfect timing, I think, for us to have this discussion.
Wow. Thank you. I did not know that, and I definitely want to track that story. So, oh, my word. I'm so glad they were found, and what a horrible thing to think of as far as what they had to endure. So I definitely will look that up. Yeah. I know that you kind of – are we live on the air now?
We've been live on the air the whole time.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure how you kind of ran your show. I agree as far as the importance of the issue. I'm glad you gave kind of the trigger warning and let parents know about their young ones. And it is something that affects all genders. In fact, in researching my book, I learned that at the middle school level, boys are almost as likely as girls to experience assault. So the numbers as far as boys being affected by this issue is growing, and it's certainly, for sure an issue that affects everyone, the LGBTQ population, especially just because of homophobia and discrimination. So that's, a lot of times people don't think of that when they think of sexual assault. We most often think about women, but it is an issue that affects everyone. And I'm really lucky to be able to do this work. I love working with young people. It's something that kind of ignites, it ignites my soul. It feels like an honor. And it's also really challenging to create spaces like you and I are having right now where we can talk openly about it, because there is so much discomfort and fear. And, you know, mm-hmm. that's been an obstacle along the way for sure. Just dealing with the, you know, the fear that can come up for folk. Yeah.
That's exactly what I mentioned in the beginning as well, is that, you know, it's a tough subject, but we need to acknowledge it and protect our children the best that we can. And educating ourselves in the toughness of the subject helps us articulate and articulate ways to be preventative without stigmatism. That's an issue that I find to be extraordinary right now with the way things are, especially in media. You know, it's very sad to have someone tell you, oh, well, it was your fault. You were flirting. And in my case, my first predator was, I was at the age of 3, and my birth mother would go to work and leave me with him, not knowing it was nothing to do with her. And he would molest me while she was at work. And there's not a 3-year-old child flirting. You know what I mean? But there are still individuals who acknowledge the reality of the situation, which a predator is a predator, and they're going to do what they need to do in their head.
Right.
And it's adversely affecting generations.
Yeah. I mean, thank you for sharing that. And that's horrific to think of. And that is your lived experience. And so it's clear that you've been able to turn some of that wound, that deep, deep wound, into an opportunity for healing not only yourself but others. And, you know, I
Absolutely.
Think that is such an important path and not an easy one. So much personal work
but
is needed along the way.
Oh, yeah. And with your story and how you share your story and your daughter's victimization, it's like, you know, we gotta step up. All of us have to step up and team up together and say, hey, this is what happened. This is reality. And there's no stigma against that other than, you know, we have to take care of the illness that perpetrates the abuse.
Yes. Well said. Yeah, I mean, there's so many variables that affect the conversation and the prevention education. I just finished an article where I talked about, you know, we can be so precious when it comes to talking about sexual assault because, you know, it's scary, it's overwhelming, so we don't tend to actually put it on the table in kind of an objective, you know, comprehensive way. It's a very tiptoey kind of conversation usually. And we also can be too passive because, you know, parents don't want to make their children uncomfortable by bringing the subject up at home. School teachers feel ill-equipped to have conversations at school. And so it's this, right now, I think, a very potent time because, and, you know, my work is primarily with teenagers and young adults. But we have this really crucial time where we're so aware of the nature of this epidemic, as Tarana Burke would say, it's an epidemic proportion at this point, the level of sexual assault in the U.S. Mm. And we're also seeing that, you know, young people are exposed to things on their screen that we don't even know what it's about anymore. It's just beyond, it's like I call it the runaway train effect. We don't, it's too much to try and track. So there's this kind of deer in the headlights response I see a lot that we have to do business with as a society. And I just think it's very, very difficult, especially when you're talking about your own child or your, you know, somebody who may have an assault history themselves that hasn't done the work to kind of heal that original wound. It just is really difficult. So I think right now we're at kind of a pivotal point where we have a lot of opportunity to go in a strong direction, to go in a better direction. We just have to get over some of these fear factors that come up along the way. And that's going to look different for each individual person.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I was watching a documentary the other day. I want to say it was like Night and Moon, something like that. And they were talking about how it's a it's a tradition or part of the culture in Afghanistan to have child brides. And they showed a little girl being sold to a 55-year-old man, and she was 9 years old, and she's, like, trying to run away. And they're dragging her to this old man. And so, you know, there's cultural stuff, and there's religious stuff, and there's, all, it's such a huge, huge conversation, and you and I are not going to even have part of it today, unfortunately, and I have to with you continue that conversation. But it's hard when culture, I think it's harder because you don't understand the reality of it. You grew up this way, so it's just the way it is. Versus for us, it's traumatic, but for women, we're constantly exploited anyway with media and marketing and, you know, our weight and our looks and all of that stuff. We're constantly being judged and criticized. And, you know, we recently had a president who likes to criticize women on their looks. And so that just seems to be part of our culture that needs to be eradicated some way. But when it comes to men, I think males have an even harder time because it's a shameful thing to have done. Like, guys won't necessarily reach out and say, hey, this happened to me, because there's, you know, there's this machismo attitude. Do you recommend to help break those barriers so that anybody can step up and have a voice?
Well, that's a great question. I think, you know, it takes some, there's so many ways to answer it. But I think what we talk a lot about in the program and in the book is, even if you find one person to talk to, one of the most difficult things in trauma recovery is not talking about it. And what the psychological damage that gets done with secrecy and the burden on the psyche that presents in holding a secret that you're not able to tell anyone, that ends up creating a lot of undue shame for survivors. And so, you know, repeatedly throughout our time with students, you know, we kind of, as you did at the beginning of your broadcast, you know, just kind of like let people know, if you have an assault story, there's going to be things that come up for you, and it's really important to find a place to talk about it. So to find one person that you can share, and that person can be a friend, or it can be a trusted adult, or it can be a teacher or counselor, but that's kind of the really important first step. So it's not something that's buried in shame, you know, that you have to live with as an individual. So, and then of course there's a lot of half, and that can look like a lot of different things. Personally and professionally, I think body work is so important, and we don't give enough emphasis on body work when it comes to trauma recovery. But you know, there's just a lot of different pathways that each individual person has to figure out what's right for them. But inhabiting the body is a really important thing for survivors, and finding safe places to talk about your story is also important. So I think those are two primary pieces for survivors to explore. And, you know, the details of that are going to look different for each individual.
Absolutely. So let's get into the nitty-gritty of this, because I was reading some of your story, and I swear I had, like, this super ninja mom bear thing growling. I don't know what I would do if my daughter came home and told me about this. And it's got to be doubly hard for you, because this is so personal now, you know. So talk to us about what happened and your reaction and how you were able to wrap your head around it.
Yeah. So this was a couple years ago. My daughter was 17. She's now 20. So this is when she was 17. She was a junior in high school. And she was a part of the National Honor Society. And as one of their duties. They did some monthly volunteer work at a local soup kitchen here in Maine. And there was kind of a series of events that led up to the assault. And, you know, listeners can read about it in my book if they want. But there was a man who was in the 60s who was one of the attendees who, during the volunteer time, approached my daughter and basically started grooming her. And he, you know, came across, as groomers do, very nice and friendly and interested in her life, and asked her about her school. And she came home, and she's a good girl. She's a good daughter. So she did what she knew she should do, and she told me about it. But the way she said it was, you know, there was this nice guy that I talked to who was older. He was really friendly, and he gave me a hug when we said goodbye. So at the time, and this is something that I regret, although in the larger scheme of things, I actually think that, you know, again, it's a horrible story that's been turned into some good things. But she told me about that. I asked if she had let the teachers know. Did she feel properly, you know, taken care of in the moment? Did the supervisor talk to her? You know, all of the kind of normal mom questions. And she answered yes to everything I said. So at the time, I thought, okay, it sounds like it's handled. And I dropped it. And that shouldn't have been what I did, but I did that. And then a month later, she went back to volunteer again. And not only did he seek her out and begin grooming her, but he began to say a lot of provocative things. He reached for her hand at one point. She got really uncomfortable. And it's interesting. I've done so much work around this issue, and every time I get to this point of the story, I feel emotional. Because here is where so many things went wrong. And this is why I think the story is such a powerful learning tool. And I give my daughter 100% credit, because she wanted the story to be shared. Because not only did I fail her in not calling the teacher after that initial incident and say, hey, my daughter came home and told me this, you guys should be aware of it, but the supervising priest, who observed the hug on the first visit, never told anybody else, so nobody else knew what had happened. Her friends observed the grooming behavior. Nobody stepped in to check in with her and say, hey, how are you doing? None of the other attendees or the church staff did anything about it. So it was a classic case, and I think that this happens so often, where everybody looks at everybody else and says, well, somebody will do something about this, right? But it's not like somebody will do something about this. I don't need to be that person. And ultimately what happened was he asked her to go into the hallway with him, and then he assaulted her by putting his hands on her buttocks and kissing her on the mouth. Now, she was able to get away. He asked her not to kiss anybody. She was able to get away. And she went back and got upset. Her friend saw her get upset. She then told her friends what happened. The friends told the teacher. The teacher called the police and me. I rushed to the church, and a report was filed, and the man was arrested. So all of the right things happened after the fact, but it was all the wrong things that led up to it that changed my whole perspective on the work I was doing professionally, on my response to sexual trauma. I've worked in sexual trauma my entire career, and yet I did not properly equip my daughter to recognize grooming behavior and respond to it in a way that kept her safe. So I just really openly talk about that, especially in my second book, which is for adults, because it's important to look at our blind spots. These are the places that get our kids in trouble if we don't know our own blind spots. And my blind spot was that I was so hypervigilant and worried of my profession and the stories I heard in my practice. I was so worried that she would get assaulted one day that I didn't actually deal with that effectively. I just had a lot of worry and a lot of fear, and I wasn't proactive enough. So that's why I feel so strongly about, you know, if we don't teach our kids, how are they going to know how to understand the social dynamics, the effects of sex in the media and pornography, how to understand victim blaming, which is over the top in our culture. You know, it's just all these different layers that I do believe it's our responsibility as parents and counselors and teachers to have these conversations with our kids. And yet it's amazing how many times we don't.
I'm going to throw a couple of curveballs at you. I don't know if you've ever listened to the show, but this is what I do, and that's why the show is so exciting. I need you to explain to us what grooming is, because a lot of people don't really, they've heard the word, but they're deer in the headlights, like, okay, they're doing their hair, what?
Yeah. So grooming is the behavior on the part of a sexual predator whereby they will come across, as this man did with my daughter, as very friendly and engaging and interested in them. And what they're doing is grooming, meaning trying to let the person think of them as a kind, friendly adult so that they become, in their mind, safe. In the victim's mind, the person becomes safe so that then they can make a sexual advance upon them. So in this, my daughter's case is the perfect example. He knew that he could, ensure her favor if he came across as very kind and kind of fatherly and warm, gentle to her. But the whole entire time he had an ulterior motive that she didn't realize until the second event when he began to get sexually assertive with her. So, it's a trap, really. It's a ploy in order to create trust in an unsuspecting person.
It's a form of manipulation is what they're doing. Yeah.
Beautiful. Yes. Exactly.
Unbelievable how sly these guys are. They're so sly. And they're adult men, and they do it to adult women as well as the more vulnerable and naive of us when we're supposed to be vulnerable and naive, you know?
Yeah.
And the second portion of the curveball is I hug everybody. I love hugs. So how do we discern a healthy, happy, good hug from something that would be considered a red flag?
Yeah, that's a great question. I want to just make one comment about the grooming because I think it's important for listeners to hear. So, grooming doesn't have to just part of a male. And in fact, I'm hearing from young people more and more stories of older women grooming young boys. And there's a whole phenomena that happens where young boys, we're talking young as 9 years old, who are being told by their peers, well, you want to get with an older woman, because again, we've indoctrinated our young men to think that sexual prowess is the definition of masculinity. So that's a cultural phenomena that creates this skewed thinking around sexual partners and older women. And there are a lot of older women who have groomed young boys. And it's just not something that we think about whenever we think of a groomer, we think of a man. But again, to your earlier point about this affects young boys and young men as well, I think that it's a phenomena that's on the rise. But to your second question, your second curveball, as far as the hug and the appropriate hug, your statement around red flag signals is the operative part of that question, because everybody has a different personal boundary. Everybody, has a different relationship to physical touch, which is why the definition of sexual assault, which is unwanted sexual touch, those are the three operative words in the definition, that's going to look different for everybody. So one of the things we talk a lot about in our course is how do you understand what that means to you, and equipping each young person to build the self-knowledge around their boundaries as well as how to communicate them. So it starts with the red flag signal, meaning, you know, this doesn't feel right. What is it? And we ask our students to come up with words to describe what that uncomfortable feeling is like if somebody gets too close or somebody touches you that you didn't want to touch you, or, you know, what is the feeling? And a lot of times we'll get, you know, words like yucky or gross or ew, you know, and any word's fine. But it's helping them relate whatever the word is with the bodily sensation in the moment, so that if that ever comes up, they actually have a way of protecting themselves and a way of communicating a boundary. So, and I'm a hugger too, so I'm somebody who's like, you know, really okay with hugging, you know, people, even acquaintances or what have you, but a lot of, especially young people, a lot of them are not. And so being able to, first of all, kind of educate adults around, you know, asking permission for hugs, which is popularity. People feel differently about it. But, you know, I think that our younger generation is going to really bring forward this awareness in a new way. At least that's what I've seen in the students I've worked with, is, you know, just being able to put words to what you're comfortable with as far as touch. And giving young people a script, which this could apply to anybody when it comes to protecting your boundaries. What do you say when somebody tries to cross a boundary? And it's amazing how many times I will hear students say, well, I didn't know what to say because I didn't want to be rude. Well, that would be mean, so I didn't say anything. And meanwhile, you know, here they are in a moment of risk and, you know, with somebody that has absolutely no, you know, intention as far as their best interest. They're only, you know, they're doing something that's self-serving in the moment. So helping young people come up with a script as far as what they would say and be able to practice that script, I think, is really important to this work of sexual assault prevention and really empowering young people on every level. Because if you know your boundaries, you know how your fight or flight patterns work and your red flag patterns work, and you can actually communicate that, that's like a superpower. I mean, I certainly never had that when I was a teenager. Nobody talked to me about boundaries and communication, and, you know, it just wasn't on our radar, and I don't think we can afford to ignore it anymore. So, so I hope that answers the question.
No, I don't think we can either, but I also, you know, there's a balance of acknowledging your own red flags and what makes you uncomfortable versus teaching your child to be afraid of everybody and everything, you know. And I think there's a combination of people out there right now that just are teaching fear about everything instead of having a balance, because not everybody's bad. There are bad people, and you have to be aware of them.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And that's where these conversations become the hardest. As a parent, your immediate thought is, lock your kid up in a dungeon with a dragon and no ladder, and throw bread up there once in a while and feed them. They're protected. They're not going to be around anybody. Well, they're safe. And that's the balancing love thing. But it's also not teaching them the self-sufficiency that they need to be aware. What you and I, you're probably about my age, you know, stranger danger when we were kids. And not to be afraid of everybody, but just to be aware. And I think that's a huge, huge gray area that's hard for parents to navigate through. So I'm glad you're able to guide them.
Well, I mean, I think, you and I are realigned on that. I mean, that is, I could talk for hours about child-centered parenting and how we are disservicing our children. So, fear, and that's one of the hallmarks of, you know, our whole process is to inform, not create fear. You know, like informing young people is not, it's not the same thing as creating a fear machine. That is not going to work. So, but I do think that a lot of students, a lot of young people are growing up in homes where they are, you know, kind of given a lot of kid glove treatment. They are kept under close watch. It's just the paradigm is just so shifted in the opposite direction from at least what I grew up with, where we were out all day and we came home for dinner and we went back out again. Like nobody knew where the kids were. We were just, you know, out playing and out
right.
having fun, and there wasn't a thought to it. And it's the opposite for children nowadays, and I 100% agree with you. We're not doing them any favors by taking care of everything for them. And one of the
right.
obstacles that I mentioned earlier that I come up with is, you know, parents not wanting to make their child uncomfortable, so not wanting to, for example, have these kinds of conversations because, well, they don't want to talk to me about that. That's going to make them uncomfortable, so we just won't do that, you know. And, again, like, well, that how do we get past this block? Because we need to. So, anyway, I completely agree with your point.
Yeah. All right. So we're running out of time. And, again, Amy, I would like to invite you back on because this conversation needs to continue, especially right now with the rawness of what's going on with all of these rings being broken up. Thank God they're happening,
yeah.
but it's sad that we got to that point. So
yeah.
one of the things that I find most interesting, especially from my personal experience, not only as a teenager who was assaulted, but, you know, a young child, 3 years old, the weapon of choice was threat. And I think that is a conversation that we should probably have, because I know that's very common where the predator will start bargaining and threatening and even in my case, threatening to kill my mother. And he actually showed up in the middle of, it was sad. But that's terrifying for a child to navigate through. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are, because I know it's very common.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really deep and difficult, you know, obstacle to figure out, and there isn't an easy answer. You know, again, I think personal empowerment and self-knowledge and giving a lot of information earlier rather than later. And granted, you know, we both know that sexual assault can happen at any stage of your life. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
we can't cover every base, but if we can get these conversations going earlier rather than later, I encourage folks to start when they give their child the first iPhone, which is getting to be younger and younger ages. That's when you start having the conversation, because that's when they're going to start being exposed to things that you don't have control over, that will be confusing and that will create a lot of mixed messages. So to start to teach young people about their safety, their importance, their understanding of themselves as being paramount, more important than anything else in the whole wide world, is their relationship with themselves, then of course, that doesn't necessarily ensure that a young person is going to communicate danger, but it begins to, you know, create awareness, hopefully without fear, but, you know, with a little bit more, you know, again, empowerment of, you know, my feelings matter, my boundaries matter, and if my boundaries are crossed, I know because I've been taught that I need to communicate that. That's the most important thing. So, you know, I just think it's a conversation that we don't tend to think of as normal, and yet, you know, again, without creating too much fear, it needs to become normalized. And hopefully that will allow, you know, well, even if I can't tell my parents, maybe I can tell my friend. Even if I can't tell my, you know, trusted adult who I think I should tell, if that's too scary for me, I can tell someone. And sometimes that's an police officer or a teacher, you know, somebody that is in a little bit more of an objective role versus a parent. I think we think as parents that we're supposed to be the ones that get talked to all the time. And actually sometimes that's more frightening for a young person than to talk to somebody who's a bit more objective like a teacher. So,
I agree with that.
Yeah. So again, if we just kind of create that normalizing of having hard conversations and of thinking of oneself and one's body as, you know, really a sacred vessel to protect and, you know, not be too precious about, but to really honor, then again, we're not going to be able to prevent every assault, but we can begin to change the inner wiring, create that new neural pathway for young people that I don't think that they come to naturally. We don't live in a, especially with misogyny and sexism, we don't live in a world where especially young women are like, hey, I matter, my feelings matter, I'm going to talk about it, I'm going to share my boundaries. It's not what we are conditioned to do as females. So we've got a lot of rewiring to do and, you know, again, creating these new thought forms. That's a slow process. You know, we've been running in the one direction for a long time, so it's a slow, slow process. But a lot can happen with effective conversation.
And I think that's key. I think if there are more people like you and I who are sharing this story and having this conversation alive and, you know, out in the world and more people join in and it just creates a almost a barrier from the past and women and children can start feeling, or people in general can start feeling a little bit more self-care and indulgent, which is what our generation was raised as thinking, you know, if you're taking care of yourself, you're selfish. Is that true?
Right.
I think that mindset also is a seed to why other people don't, you know, they don't advocate for themselves because then they're embarrassed. And that's a whole different show in itself. Do you find it difficult to articulate with teens? I mean, you personally probably don't anymore because this is what you do. I have a teenage daughter. I mention anything about sex and she rolls her eyes and she's like, Mom, you know? So I think I'm curious as to how you advise people to have that conversation without having them roll their eyes and, you know, run out of the room.
Yeah. Well, I do want to refer folks to my second book that I mentioned earlier because the entire book is focused on that. It's under the same title, Be Strong, Be Wise. But there, you know, there's a lot of mini kind of ideas and thoughts to adhere to kind of along the way when you're having these hard conversations. One thing is not, you know, if they roll their eyes, they roll their eyes. They are still taking in everything you're saying. And a lot of times, you know, we as parents, and I did the same thing when my daughter was a teenager, you know, it's too uncomfortable, so they're going to roll their eyes, they're going to reject it, it's just too difficult. And really what's happening in those conversations, and they can be short, casual, check-in style conversations, they're actually statistically proven to be more effective anyway, as far as how the teenage brain works.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to sit down and have the talk, you know, for hours and hours. It's more just, hey, let's look at the definition of sexual assault so you know what it is, and let's talk about the three words, unwanted sexual touch, and figure out, you know, what that means to you. And asking questions is a great way of getting teenagers to think about the content differently. And the questions don't need to necessarily be voiced aloud to the parent, but asking them to think about what does this mean to you? And if somebody were to try and cross your boundary, what would you say? I mean, that is like basic assault prevention conversation that still doesn't happen, you know. So really starting with bare bones stuff like that, 10-minute conversation, and then building from there so that you can, I mean, there's so many different angles. You can take a story from the news and talk about that. There is usually a victim-blaming component to almost every assault story.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at those components and talking about them actively, parent and child, it takes the pressure off of the teenager because you're not talking about them, but you're absolutely providing them with an education because you're looking at an example of a real-life situation that every teenager, no matter what, will automatically think, how does this apply to me? You know, that's the nature of that.
We are at our space.
Okay.
We're at 2 minutes. It goes by really fast, Amy. Tell us where we can find more information about you. And yeah, it's fast. And one thing that you hope to get out of this show today.
Oh, well, I hope that people feel as though they have some you know, things to go by, you know, a little bit of a roadmap for having these conversations and for thinking about it differently and really material. You know, that's my goal. But folks can get a hold of me through my website, bestrongbewise.com, and email is amy@bestrongbewise.com.
Amy, big hugs to you and your family, and especially to your daughter for being so awesome to share her story. And I hope that we can rebook another show to continue the conversation. I appreciate your work and what you do.
I would love that. And thanks so much for the time, Rusty, and for the great questions.
All right. Have a good day. You're listening
to
Living and Thriving with Rusty. I'm Rusty, and this is what I get to do. I get to virtually travel all around the world talking to beautiful, amazing people, doing strong, amazing, powerful things with their stories. What's your story? What are you going to do with it? Don't live in it, but navigate through it. And sometimes you can use your story as a tool to help other people, just like in this case where Amy's daughter was sexually assaulted and they were able to team up, heal up, and work together to help you and the rest of the world live and thrive safely through the whole conversation of sexual assault and hopefully prevention. Know that you're loved, know that you're beautiful, and do something kind. Do something kind for yourself. Do something kind for somebody else. Who knows? Just do something kind. Till next week.
Living and vibing with Rusty.